ground control to Major Tom.
Staunton wriggling his way to the post and right on the post. There are three there. It must be a try. Yes, it is. A second try for John Kelly. Now it's all there for the taking as Gloucester pick themselves up from underneath their own post. Tom.
Ground control to Major Tom.
This is Crotty. Oh yes, O'Gara is in! Another lead for Munster, and what a magnificent try!
Check ignition.
Fully controlled, oh, straight on! Now there will be no greater place in Munster history than the one reserved for the man who scores the special individual try.
Savage of Three Red Kings. Tom, we knew it was going to be tight. We knew it was going to be close. At the end, there was nothing to separate the two sides. I'll put it to you, Tom, that this is a huge 2 points on the road for Munster. When you can go away against arguably the biggest, toughest challenge in the group, when that's first up, it's away from home, it's in England, against a side who are unbeaten this season. You go there, you not only pick up 2 points in the road, you can pick up 2 points in the road in a losing bonus with four tries, but you also pick up 2 points and you deny the home team two crucial home points. And it automatically switches the mindset. Now Munster have got two precious points on the road, and then the narrative will be that Exeter are in under pressure, having dropped 2 points at home. Huge, huge, huge 2 points on the road for Munster.
Raph, this is a great performance. A fantastic result, you know, and yes, it was the win. It possibly could have been a win, but in the conditions away from home, with the breakdown being as viciously contested and as physical as it was, you have to just go and look just and just say this is a superb result for Munster. Exeter are already denied a home win. That they would have been banking on. Look, Exeter are a serious team. Exeter are a side that would have gone into this game with confidence. They're unbeaten this year. They have a brand of rugby that perfectly suits the players that they have. They're at home. Look, they were going into this game looking for 4 points. If Munster got a bonus point, fair enough, whatever else, I'd say they were happy enough to come away with that with the conditions pre-game. But look, for Munster to go and deny them a win while earning 2 points of their own is an absolutely massive result in the overall layout of this pool, the complexion of this pool rather. And last year Munster started against Cast and with a draw, and it was seen as a worst result. The reason being is that Racing 92 were expected to be Munster's top challenger in the pool. So as a result, it was seen as points dropped because they would assume that Racing would go to Exeter and or to Cast in that circumstance last year and beat them. This year, Exeter are without doubt the biggest challengers to Munster going on form from last season, their form from this season, just their reputation in general, how close they pushed Leinster in both games last year. And basically, this is a fantastic result because it immediately, like you said there, puts a huge amount of pressure on Exeter straight away and immediately gives Munster a chance to, as long as they back it up this weekend against Gloucester, a chance to take control of this pool nice and early and set up January to be a sort of a pressure cooker that Munster in general come out on the other end of. It's got to be backed up this weekend, but what a great performance.
Yeah, it certainly was, Tom. And look, I think we'd mentioned as well the importance of Munster's set piece. Munster's set piece was pretty good, but not only on their own ball, they also laid down a huge challenge to Exeter on their ball, especially on their throws. We saw Peter O'Mahony get penalised once for an early jump in front, but O'Mahony was going up at two all the time, was putting pressure on Exeter, saying if you want to throw, if you want to find a jumper today, you're going to have to go over two in that windy conditions. You're going to have to go past me. And you know, Munster played the wind, played that con played the conditions tactically very, very astute, and they kind of forced Exeter to do things that they didn't want to be doing in those conditions. And it helped. There was some good steals, and not even if it wasn't if the ball wasn't stolen, it, you know, it wasn't the cleanest of line out possession. And if it was, then the Maul seemed to the Maul D seemed to be fairly on message as well. So you had Munster really, really combining the combining everything really on the defensive side of the ball to slow Exeter's game plan down.
Oh, 100%. I think we spoke about this last week, as to, well, what would be the way that Munster would look to try and beat Exeter in this game. You have to disrupt them, their main ways of playing. Their main ways of playing are to retain possession at the breakdown over multi-phase, and then look to try and find a good alignment or a defensive error, and then go through and then start the process again. And they love to maul and build off the maul, coming directly from the lineout. Munster would have known this. They would have known in the conditions as well. Look, there's going to be a lot of lineouts here. So what will they do? There's very few people playing this game anywhere in the world that are as good a front jumper on attacking or defensive ball than Peter Omani. His ability to get into the air at ridiculously high and ridiculously quick means that in these conditions, he was forcing the Exeter hooker to perform incredibly difficult technical throws in a place where Tadhg Byrne was also patrolling in the area where he was going to, with a wind that was blowing unbelievably hard. Munster really did do a great job of using their ability, which I think Munster are a far better team in the air at the lineout than a lot of teams, but definitely Exeter. They used that to disrupt Exeter's possession, to disrupt their ability to build the kind of attack platform that they want to build. And in that regard, I thought it was hugely impressive. I think that, you know, there's a lot of credit. He's taken a big kicking over the course of the last couple of weeks. Johan van Horn really did game plan this one out perfectly, in the conditions to attack Exeter exactly where they were weak in their attacking build.
Yeah, he certainly did. And I suppose one of the standout, just looking at the stats, Tom, if you look at it, 53-47, the territory, or sorry, the possession breakdown in favor of Exeter, but Munster had more territory, only marginally. That you know, if only marginally more. If you look at meters gained, though, Exeter had an extra 116 meters gained than Munster. Line breaks the same at four apiece, but defenders beaten. Here's one that pops up. Munster beat 13 Exeter defenders, whereas Exeter beat Munster defenders 25 occasions. Now, to me, that says Munster scramble defense. You know, when a Munster player was beaten and an Exeter player went on a big run, gained a lot of meters, the scramble defense was on hand to shut down that space. You know, make the initial tackle, and you know yourself, Tom. When you get back and you make that initial tackle from scramble defense, the guys coming back have to be disciplined, can't take that sneaky half lazy yard off of the off on off the offside line, can't give away cheap penalties. Munster didn't do that. You know, it takes a huge effort, obviously, from you to take the Duncan Williams example. Duncan Williams gets back, makes that tackle, forces a turnover. But if you look at the other guys chasing back, they're all in line. They're all waiting for that next phase. They're all waiting for that next tackle. And, you know, that's they're those penalties are a killer to give away, and they're very easy to give away because, you know, mentally you have to be switched on to get behind that offside line. The touch judge is going to be looking for it. The referees will be looking for it. It's an easy one to give. Munster didn't do that. They were astute, and they were composed under pressure, and, you know, especially when they were under the pump defensively.
Oh yeah, and look, and I think JP Ferrara has to take a lot of credit for that as well. He's another guy who's taking a bit of a kicking. Look, Munster's defense in this circumstance, like you said, there's defenders beaten, but when you look at the amount of times Munster were under huge pressure inside their own 22, and then further in deeper than into the 22, only really happened twice. We conceded one try, and we denied them right at the last after 20 something phases at the end of the game. As an actual defensive performance, Munster were happy enough to give Exeter the outside, but we weren't going to get done up the middle. If Exeter were going to try and retain possession across the middle of the field in between those 15-meter lines, we were happy enough to attack them in defence, go after the breakdown and force them. Look, if you're going to go wide in these conditions with a greasy ball, the wind quite literally blowing the ball out of people's hands, go for it. And we were happy enough to give them that. And I thought Dan Goggin, Rory Scannell, and both wingers were very good. Mike Haley as well were very good in their positioning and very good in their scrambling across, like you said, to shut down those opportunities once the Chiefs surged up, because we knew that if they get that wide angle, they're coming right back across the field. And if Munster were giving too much space, Exeter are just expert at taking spacing in between forwards who are lined up in the middle of the pitch, making a 5 metre gain, but then using that to compress your defence and attack you down at the other end and create serious line breaks. Not all missed tackles and not all line breaks are created equally. Sometimes a missed tackle is okay as long as it sets up the stop tackle, which stops you up, you know, and actually is a thing that ends their attacking sequence. That's happened a few times. There's a couple of really good defensive plays in this game. Like I said, Dan Goggin made one really good tracking tackle in the first half. CJ Sander made an absolutely outstanding stop in the end game, coming up to clock going red, Exeter pushing forward, looking to get a win. And believe me, look, you know, people might have said, look, Munster had a bonus point that they would have taken right before the game. It would have been easy to drop off, especially with Exeter. Look, they're sealing off at the ruck. They're going in off their feet. You're not going to get those decisions, really, especially at that time. So, like, for the likes of CJ Sander, that instance, you know, you could understand some guys after a long game, maybe they don't make as good a stop as he did. But look, this guy's a lion. This guy's a kind of, he's an international, he's an absolute elite player. And that stop right there was a key point in making sure Exeter had to work for every phase, which means that come the 20th phase, the ball can be attacked and spilt. It was a hugely powerful, hugely physical defensive performance, both in the tackle and at the breakdown. And it was just hugely impressive to witness, especially in that second half. But in the first half in particular, some of the defensive plays there from the likes of Peter Manny, from all the forwards really, were just astounding to watch. It was such a physical, intense, old-school game. It really was a fantastic one to watch.
CJ Sander's try, I saw you with some very intricate analysis of how he took advantage of the drifting pillar. It's only when you watch it back that you see it. He did it, all it takes is a little half gap, and CJ from 5 meters out is going to be a very hard guy to stop.
Oh yeah, look, you just cannot give CJ Sander any kind of space 5 meters out, because he will score. He's just it's unbelievably powerful, especially when he's got that low center of gravity, carrying quite low. Look, a concrete bollard would struggle to stop him. But in that situation there, Munster were under the pump. I do think that we perhaps had a try from them all denied. That was, you know, for me, I would have given it, which, you know, will come as a big shock to a lot of people. But I think that came as the mall was incorrectly ruled out. That should have been a try for Chris Clutie. But when I look at that try from CJ Sander, first of all, Tyburn, his ability to stabilise the line-out on the other side and then give a good drive in the setup. Tommy O'Donnell had a huge part in this try as well. His big carry actually took out two Exeter defenders, and that then made sure that the space was there for CJ Sander to attack, because Exeter couldn't fold around because it didn't have the numbers. And when those two lads were down, that created the space with the pillar, had to drift away. CJ Sander had space to work with, and he finished like CJ Sander does. It was a crucial try. Joey Carberry's finish, or his conversion rather, in the aftermath, should not be overlooked either, because in those windy conditions, they're very easy to snap off to the left. He finished it 10-all at that stage, and you know, it was, given that Exeter were really looking to just play a very, very narrow game given the conditions, Munster beat them up through the middle. Munster will take a lot of credit from that, especially when you're at home. You know, both sides knew at the end that was a massive result for Munster. Exeter knew it, Munster knew it, and while it wasn't a win, it was the very next best thing.
Yeah, it certainly was. And just look at the line-out stats there, Tom. Munster won 11 from 14 throws, a success rate of 79%, whereas Exeter's line-out success was only 60%. Munster had 5 line-out steals, and Exeter had one crooked throw, so that's how they ended up losing six lineouts. So, you know, Munster's lineouts, that's far more clinical than the home side. And again, every time you shut down a lineout, you shut down an attacking platform, you shut down you know, the possibility of having to defend for the next 3 to 4 minutes and draining energy. So all these small lineout steals, lineout wins, lineout disruptions, they all add up.
Oh, they are, because look, the lineout is, I think, I'm not sure what the exact percentage is, but the lineout is responsible for 54-55% of all tries scored in rugby. If you can attack a side's lineout, you can take away the vast majority of their attacking platform, and Munster did that to Exeter with fantastic skill. You know, we spoke defensively about what it was like, but the attacking manner in which Munster were able to use their possession as well, they used the maul to great effect. I think Exeter only had 3 mauls. That's how good Munster's defence was in the air. Munster had, I believe it was something like 11 out of 11, but they went 100% for maul completion. And that'll show you as well, Munster, look, ran down that clock fantastically in the first half. The maul was hugely impressive. Tyke Byrne was calling the line-out, and he just called very simple, very smart throws. Niall Scanlon executed perfectly in diabolical conditions for a thrower. And it really is a testament to Munster's set piece that they were able to damage Exeter while not taking the same damage themselves. And that went a long way to getting this result in the first place. Munster's ability to stymie Exeter's possession, but also use them all to really good effect to run down that clock. But also, you know, I would say that Munster's try came off the back of a fantastic line out in Maul. So, look, it was hugely effective, and Munster will take a lot of credit from that going forward.
You've heard the reaction from the Munster press conference during the week. They're all very, very happy with the 2 points. And, you know, Tom, that picking up 2 points on the road like that, very hard to measure, I suppose, how much that means to a side when if you go back to pre the Leinster game, and Munster were looking for away performance, and the performance was key. We got that against Leinster, came up that little bit short, you know, and bar some refereeing decisions or non-decisions, it could have been a different story. But, you know, Leinster, we know what to expect from them. A European away trip, as always, brings its own pitfalls. You know, the last 2 weeks that Munster have went on the road, they have those 2 weeks, the two results, and again, I go on like a broken record, more importantly, the two performances, they have to fill this team with confidence. They've, you know, they've stepped up to the plate the last 2 weeks. They've really, you know, accepted the challenge. It's weird that we're talking about the performances in such positive terms when you think that they only got two match points over the two games. But I even got the feeling, being in the High Performance Centre on Monday, that they're happy with where they are, and that they are really looking forward to Gloucester on Saturday.
Oh, very much so. You know, look, it's one thing in the aftermath of a loss to look back at your missed opportunities and go, well, if we'd gotten those, we would be in a situation where we are now, looking at an L in the aftermath. But look, Munster will certainly see that there was opportunities that were left behind them in Exeter that, you know, they could have gone on to win. But it was a very tight game, you know. So, and given the conditions, both the wind and the kind of the damp conditions that were there, you'll take those 2 points all day, every day. You can look at, well, you know, we should have maybe had a chance at winning that game. Yeah, you could say that. But look, the conditions being what they were, to get 2 points, you're just delighted. And definitely there was an air there that they were pretty happy with where they were, you know. They haven't won away from home yet this season. But when you look at the opposition, and this is something that, you know, people tend to forget, Glasgow finished top of Conference A last year. Rangers Saracens is very close. Cardiff, Challenge Cup winners, won away in France there at the weekend. Leinster did quite well last season. I think everybody can agree. And look like they're off in the same vein again this year. And then Exeter, who are former Aviva Premiership champions, were in the final last year, are unbeaten this year. I think Munster are doing well enough away from home, given the context. At home, they're going to be big favourites against Gloucester. Gloucester are a serious team. They do have some injuries at the moment, for sure. But look, I think that Munster have a chance to really push this on and build on those last two away day performances, which were very good. But this is the one now where you really add the value to that Exeter draw. If Munster can get a big win, you know, 4 points at least, like on Saturday, then they'll be flying it heading into the November International Series.
I'm actually surprised at you, Tom, that you aimed to put context on some of those Munster performances, considering who they were playing. I mean, since when has context ever been required to proclaim the destruction of Munster?
Context is never really required. All you really need is a login for the Irish Independent website.
Yeah, that's true. Tom, we'll touch back on, I suppose, what's coming up later in the afternoon, in the week, but we'll be back with the analysis of Gloucester in more detail towards the end of the week. But tell us a bit more about what's coming up on Three Red Kings.
This week on Three Red Kings, I've got a couple of different articles coming up. I've already had two up this today. One of them is about Anthony Foley on the anniversary of his death. And I'll be also having the alternative analysis video coming out this week, looking at Munster's line-out defence work against Gloucester or against Exeter, and also looking at some of the opportunities that Munster left behind and different ways that they can look to execute those heading into the weekend if there's similar circumstances. I'll also be looking at the red eye for Gloucester, looking into what I expect they'll look to do this weekend, and looking at the Blood and Thunder podcast, which is basically just going over the game as it comes on. That'll be towards the end of the week, but that's all on patreon.com/3redkings, which is €3 a month.